Hi, Jordana.
Hello, Paige.
So today we're talking about embroidery, which is such a fun topic, isn't it?
It is, yes.
So I don't know about you, but I really didn't know much about like Japanese styles of embroidery before coming here. And learning more about them has been really interesting during my time here, specifically the technique of sashiko or sashiko, which is like this restorative technique of repairing material that's been kind of worn through so that it can continue to be used even though it's older. Do you know much about sashiko?
Like, I know a little bit, but it's only through a friend who does sashiko herself, and she does it more in a decorative style, onto fabrics for maybe it can be used for interiors or what have you, or handkerchiefs, that kind of thing. And it's very much using the traditional Japanese designs, like the waves or flower patterns.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was originally this, you know, maintaining from a sense of frugality and a sense of really needing to reuse or continue to use fabrics to this place of course, the Japanese way is to make it as beautiful as possible, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
And these patterns are just so beautiful. If you look at sashiko patterns, as you were saying, like there are these different styles that you can use. My personal favorite is the flower one. Do you have a favorite?
Oh, I love the wave.
And I think this is a really interesting concept, this idea of like moving from this place of like the Japanese idea of motainai, like not wanting to waste a thing, right? Like reusing so that we don't waste, and taking it to a place of like beauty.
Yes.
And that's something that I think, at least for me as an American in Japan, has been a real reorientation of thinking about objects and their use and the ways we interact with them. Because growing up when and where I did, there was much more a sense of like, we'll just get a new one, right? And much less a sense of repairing and making a thing into beauty.
Yeah, like I grew up with a sense of repairing or making something. There was that sense, but it was very much in a functional way as opposed to a beautiful way. Obviously, we wanted to make things look good, but there was a different sense when you compare it to how Japanese people really take extra care on the craftsmanship in terms of the beauty of it as well as the functionality.
Right, yes. And today's guest who we're speaking to, she has mentioned that she tried to learn sashiko, but it wasn't as accessible to her as a different way of engaging with the materials, which is much more intuitive and flowy and related to her experience in the moment of the materials, which is also pretty interesting, isn't it?
It is, because it's almost like, you know, she used the starting point of the sashiko and made it into her own way of, you know, using those techniques and fabrics to make something brand new, which, you know, is wonderful to see, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. And so Lindsay, our guest today, she has just really amazing, an amazing body of work where she takes these secondhand or vintage materials, specifically very often denim. There's a lot of like indigo or denim in there, and uses different colors of thread to create shapes and waves and almost like natural patterns that come through in her very intuitive way of making.
Yeah, and it's really interesting talking to her because, you know, you look at her work and you never know how people get to that point, hey, the process of starting to the end product. And hearing her talk about her work and the process was just so lovely, because I guess that's why we love doing this podcast, though, isn't it? Because, you know, you get to put the personality with the artwork and see how they those two things combine to make this beautiful product. So yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, and you and I have also had our own like very distinct and important experiences in the past few years of creating from this intuitive place and making things with that spirit in mind of we're just going to see what happens, right?
Yes. Yeah,
and that's something that I think we can both relate to on that experiential level as well, how it feels to just lean in and say yes to the process itself, as opposed to planning out ahead of time what we want. Yeah. That has been significant for us both in our bodies of work in the past few years. And I would say probably even longer than that, you know, longer than a few years. It's just a really important element of my own creative process, I'll say. I enjoy, I'm going to go farther than enjoy. Like, I find profound significance in working that way. Because I think it brings forth something deep in the creator that isn't available in the same way when we're following a prescribed plan.
Yes, because you're tapping into who you authentically are. Hey, you're not trying to do something that you think you should be doing, or following a plan that someone else has made. You're sticking to your own unique sense of how to create, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, let's dive into this conversation with Lindsay. You're going to enjoy it. She's amazing. Originally from Atlanta, Georgia, in the United States, Lindsay Gradoff has lived in various parts of Japan since 2009. Using repurposed denim and other secondhand or vintage textiles, Lindsay creates abstract, intuitive embroidery works that each compose their own little universes. Incorporating bright colors and a variety of textures, Lindsay's pieces are a bit like being invited into a Zen garden or a hakoniwa, a small, contained garden that encompasses a tiny world of tactile discovery. Rich and compelling in their themes and explorations, each piece invites you to get lost in it and enjoy the experience thoroughly. Welcome to the podcast, Lindsay.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, no worries.
I love your work. I remember seeing your work a few years ago at an exhibition, and I was just blown away by it. So I can't wait to hear about how you make these creations.
Thank you for keeping up, yeah.
So we start our pod asking all our guests the same question. So Lindsay, can you tell us, what's your first memory of doing something creative?
I don't have like a specific moment where it's like, oh, I should do this, or I'm an artist, or anything like that. But having thought about it, I was definitely a kid who was always building things, for lack of a better description. Like, you know, you have toys or like action figures growing up. And so I wasn't actually maybe playing with those toys. I was building them like little houses and like sets and things. Like I had a very extensive collection of dinosaur figurines. And so I was often like building like little houses out in the garden and things like that. I went through a phase in the AM, a child of the 80s and 90s. And so like Jim Henson and The Labyrinth and things like that, got really into like fairies, you know, and so I'd build little fairy houses outside. I was also the kind of kid who was obsessed by the Sims game that came out on PC. And I took great pleasure in like building these really cool houses. And then once it came time to play the game, I had very little interest in actually playing the game. I was also a kid who, like for a science project or history project, thinking back on it, I would find like any excuse to make a diorama, even if it didn't call for it. I would often get in trouble or, you know, score very poorly because the teacher would say like, oh, that was really cool and intricate, you know, this little Aztec empire you made out of cardboard, but it was actually an essay you needed to write too. So I have to fail you, but, you know, A for effort. So it's also not the best student, but, you know, and so, yeah, building things. You know, if I'd been better at math, maybe in another life, I would have been an architect, but.
Right. It sounds like that you have an interest in sort of intrinsic interest in like creating worlds or creating structures of like little universes.
Yeah, just noticing that pattern, I think, is what that question pulled out more than anything.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
It's so funny how we all work in such different ways. That as I was listening to you, I was thinking, oh, I always don't really struggled with dioramas when I had to make one. Like that 3D element of doing something was always like, oh gosh, give me something 2D.
No, that was my jam. I would find any way to do a diorama. Again, even if it didn't call for it, it's like, you need to, you know, do a project on the food chain in science class. It's like, okay, well, I made this really elaborate thing out of styrofoam. So
I love it.
like to build things.
So Lizzie, in your work you use only secondhand and vintage textiles, don't you? So will you tell us a bit more, like, in depth about the materials that you use and their significance to you?
I guess in general I'm not a fan of waste. Like, I've always been kind of like the weird minimalist person kid growing up. Like, I just don't like excess in general. I've always, from a young age, been the kid who shopped at vintage and thrift stores because I thought it was cool, but, you know, now it's like, well, it's more ethical. I don't like or appreciate waste. And so being in Japan, I never actually thought, like, I'm gonna be into textiles. Like, that wasn't my purpose. But becoming aware of it maybe 10 years ago, it's like, wow, like, there's just this abundance of material that no one seems to want to use. I'm not using really nice fabrics. Like, I'm not using Boro. I'm not using anything that's been worked on already by a previous person. And so it is just like what you would buy, they call it hagire, but, like, you know, rags, which you can buy by the kilo, and it's really nice stuff. And so the fact that there's, like, these beautiful things just kind of hanging out, no one's really appreciating, it's a real shame, I think. And so, yeah, just trying to appreciate what we already have, and trying to make beautiful things out of what maybe people wouldn't think is something useful at first sight.
And it gives them this whole new life. And, like, you're creating these universes or worlds on this sort of canvas that would have otherwise gone into the garbage or into the incinerator. Like, is really, quite cool, symbolically also.
There's lots of really beautiful things out there that you can use. It's sad to think that things do get thrown away like that. And the things that people give me for free, where they're like, oh yeah, I was cleaning out my attic and I was going to throw this away, but here, like, maybe you would like this. And it, weird gifts I've been given over the years, like a grandmother's red kimono, under kimono. And in the past, when they were cleaned, they were unpicked entirely. And so, like, it's just the pieces of the kimono laid flat and washed. And the last person who washed it, like, has their signature on the tag still. And it's from 50 years ago. And so, yeah, she was like, I'm going to throw this away, but do you want it? It's like, yes, please, don't throw that away.
Yeah.
That's treasure.
Like, oh my goodness. Like, you have no idea what you have.
Wow.
Just using things that you have around, I think, is important. And it does make some kind of rules, you know? Sometimes I'll think, like, oh, if I just could buy bolts of the same fabric, things would be more consistent. I would have, you know, maybe a collection of work that is more cohesive. But it's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And so it does make rules and boundaries that way, which could annoying, but also interesting. So,
yes, so often that's the case, isn't it, with those those creative rules that we have for ourselves?
Yeah, totally.
I'm curious, how you source most of it? Like, it sounds like some people you're receiving sometimes. Are there particular ways you prefer to source your materials?
Yeah, and I feel safe saying this because maybe people are listening from abroad and they can't, they don't have access to this. So it's a bit sneaky. But I love the online selling platform called Mercari. Because I actually, my partner likes to joke, but I truly hate shopping. I hate the crowds. I hate the searching aspect. I'm just not a shopper. I never have been. And so to be able to go on an online platform and have a quick search or get pinged for certain keywords, it's like, yes, sounds great. And I've developed a relationship with a few women on Mercari where I just buy from them now. And so it's like we exchange letters and it's quite strange. But yeah, I get most of my materials these days from Mercari, actually.
That's cool. Yeah.
People just don't know what they have. I feel bad. I feel like I'm taking advantage sometimes of what they're selling because they just don't know what a treasure it is. But also in that way, because everyone likes to talk about the Oedo antique market. And that's really, I don't know if it's maybe a hot take, but it's a place for tourists.
Right.
And the prices are extremely high and the materials there are things I would feel really self-conscious working on. Like they're nice already. Like it needs no further work. And so I would never buy something so nice.
Yeah.
But also like gifts, people just give me things constantly.
Yeah. And it's really cool too, to have those relationships with people that you've developed online over time, that you have, this kind of give and take. And there is, I don't know, sometimes I'll think of it as like an ecosystem, like a creative ecosystem, right?
Oh, definitely.
Right.
Definitely.
And you get to be an important part of that. That I think is really interesting about, specifically about foreigners in Japan and the way we interact with Japanese culture, especially those of us who've been here quite a while. There becomes this almost like interweaving of our culture and Japanese culture within ourselves, right? And how we do things. And I think what you're doing can be so eye-opening for people who've never thought of their grandmother's kimono as being valuable or whatever it is, right? Like you're bringing a new kind of perspective and value to.
Yeah, I'm definitely that weird foreigner. like the people who do give me things are like, this is old, this is stinky, you don't want this. It's like, no, I really do, please, like, I promise. And so, yeah, they think I'm the weird foreigner for sure. But also what I'm doing is so hyper specific and niche. Like I'm a foreigner living in Japan using Japanese textiles and doing embroidery work. Once you know certain people who do the same work, like there's like 10 other women I know, and like they're not all in Tokyo, 10 Japanese women, and it's like everyone knows everyone by name. It's like, oh, so and so Aichi-ken, like, yes, she's doing this exhibition. And it's a very small like niche community. Which is fun.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. So I'd love to talk a bit more about like the actual stitching that you're doing and how you come to it. What's happening in that process? Like, it seems like your work is quite spontaneous rather than being premeditated. So I'm super curious what that process is like for you and for how you're engaging with the material as you're doing it.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not the kind of person, I mean, like going back to the school making dioramas where I didn't need to, I'm not very good at following rules, like in general. I mean, to this day, I don't take direction well, and I'm not good at following instructions by any means. And so when I first started, I tried to do sashiko, and just had no patience for it, to be quite frank. Like, I'm not. People are always like, oh, your work's so patient. It's like, I think it's just stubbornness because I'm actually quite impatient. And so when things don't go right, or if like, with sashiko, it's very meticulous, I think. And so the moment I go off script or off pattern, it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess we're going this way now.
Right.
And that's just kind of how I work. And so when I'm working, I don't make notes, I don't do rough drafts, but I will think about like, I've got this fabric and I want to kind of like make this shape, and I'll kind of mold it over for days or weeks, depending on my schedule. And so when I finally sit down to do it, it's like, well, I kind of had an idea of what I wanted to do, and it never turns out quite right to begin with, it's like, all right, well, we're going this way now. And then when I start working, it's kind of, and it's hard to describe, like, very flowing. Like I always start in a corner, and then I just end up kind of working from left to right or top to bottom. And so I generally like will make one line. It's like, all right, I guess we're having this wavy line, and then everything else kind of flows around it. I don't know, it's weird. It's hard to describe. Like, I love the water. Like, I grew up a lot around the water and swimming and the ocean. Georgia actually has the, beaches and stuff like that. And so growing up a lot near the beach, I think when I look at my work, it's very watery. Like, if you were to stick your hand in water and like drag it and like the water flowing around your hand, I think that's kind of a motif.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm accidentally capturing.
Right. Yeah. I think when you look at your work, you can really see flow. It looks like flow to me. The shapes and how they move together and like this, yet there is this real movement and topography, right? But like, I think water also has a topography to it, doesn't it? Like
when yeah, we're no, definitely. My, I'm a teacher, and so my students joke, but in the movie Finding Nemo, there's the teacher character who's the manta ray.
Yes.
And my students, almost every year, even if they don't talk to each other, I was like, you're kind of like that manta ray. Like, okay, what do you mean? Like, well, you're like, you're kind of goofy and you're kind of loud and like, but you're really flowy. And like, that's very interesting to hear a 13-year-old say like, oh, it's really flowy. That's true. Like, it's true though. Like I'm dancing around the front of the classroom. I'm a very physical person. Like I'm constantly moving. I talk with my hands. Like I guess you would say very exaggerated in my physical movements. And I think that shows up in my work.
Yeah, I can see that. Yes, absolutely. And so it is kind of gestural, isn't it? Like the shapes that come about feel gestural.
Yeah.
I was curious, Lindsay, when you first started to do this type of work, did you find you had that flow, or were you thinking about it more? Like, I'm interested at how you got to the level where you could just follow your intuition. Is that something that came naturally at the beginning, or something that kind of gradually happened?
It's hard to pin down. The more I do my work and the more people who give me these kind, generous comments about my work, the more I can like piece together, I guess, things in the past that's like, oh, I guess this is a reflection of that. Like, I've always been kind of a weird oddball like kid, like, oh, that's Lindsay style, or like that's the Lindsay way of doing things. And I think a lot of it is generally being unconcerned or unbothered by how it's going to turn out. Like my personality in a nutshell is like, okay, I guess we're just going to wing it. And yeah. So I think that's how it is in my work.
Yeah, so you're just kind of going with that natural flow of how you are generally.
Yeah. I'm for better or for worse, a pretty footloose and fancy free person. And so it's, I'm not generally worried. And so it's just, yeah, it just kind of comes out.
I think it's interesting to hear, because I think a lot of people, that's something they do think about, especially when they look at someone's work that they really admire. It's like, how did they get to that point? It's interesting to hear how, everyone has a different way to get there. So, yeah.
It's funny, just as a quick anecdote, I was recently in the States in October and was looking at a few like kindergarten things I had done. And I like not drawing or illustration, like I've never been an illustrator or drawer, but like signing my name, for example. And like, so looking at, 4-year-old Lindsay's handwriting, it's like, oh my gosh, that S looks just like the wavy lines I do.
Wow.
And yeah, and like I remember, so I went to a Catholic preschool, being like kind of reprimanded by the nuns or the sisters because my handwriting was so bad. But like I can look at those shapes and it's like, oh man, that looks just like the wavy lines I do. And so that is kind of,
right,
I don't know, a weird idiosyncrasy that has kind of lasted, I guess.
Yeah,
some things just don't change, some things stick with us without us even realizing. That's beautiful.
It is, yeah. And so when I look at your pieces, there do seem to be certain shapes or patterns or textures that repeat. And I'm really curious about that piece as well. Like, do you find that there's a way in which that they emerge? Is it related to how you're feeling in each individual moment? Or it sounds like from what you were saying earlier, whatever the first shape or line is, almost is the seed from which all the rest emerges. I'd love to hear more about that element for you.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I tried to do sashiko and wasn't really good at it. And then from there, I was like, well, I'll investigate some Western style embroidery. I'm not really interested in figurative work. And so when you look at embroidery, a lot of it is like kind of floral based or like lots of design elements. And I, having done some research, found, you know, like the blanket stitch, for example, or in techniques that can be made into abstract geometric forms. If you kind of play around long enough with the geometry of that stitch, for example. And I don't know, again, using traditional techniques to make an abstract work. I mean, it took time, like my early work, I think there's some on Instagram towards the bottom you can see, but like, it's definitely kind of crazy and all over the place. But yeah, I like geometry. I like the circle patterns that the blanket stitch can make. I tried to learn how to quilt at first, doing textile work, but I don't like piecing things together. Like the precision of that, I'm not very good at, and so I gave it up pretty quickly because I am actually quite impatient. But I liked how you can make geometric patterns by just putting cloth down. And so this is before I knew what applique was. And so when you're putting things down on fabric, you have to tack them down or keep them down. And so my work, I think, kind of grew out of the need to just have all of the fabric secured. And so just, yeah, having the need or the desire to make sure everything stays down, I think led to having all of the density. I do like texture and pattern and repetition are things I really enjoy. People tell me often, like, oh, I look at your work and I see Yayoi Kusama, for example, or I look at your work and I see Van Gogh. And it's like, okay, well, that's, thank you very much. Like, I'm not necessarily inspired by those people, but right, having read about them or becoming more familiar with their work, like Yayoi Kusama, for example, I came across the concept of horror vacui. Or vacui, I'm not saying it right, probably, in art. And it's the fear of empty spaces.
Uh-huh, yes.
And so when I'm working, it's never my intention to fill an entire space. And it's certainly not my intention to, like, fill it so densely. But once I start, I can't stop. And it's like, okay, like, we're doing this pattern, and so I have to fill it to the edge. It's like a compulsion almost. Which is why I recently, actually, just sidebar, I'm getting more into applique for larger pieces because I just physically can't work so densely. there's definitely a space and time limit.
Right, yeah, that's totally understandable. I mean, I think it's really interesting, too, to hear you talk about, like, the process of filling the space and what it's like. And I'm curious about, like, as you're doing that, does it feel meditative to you? Does the process of laying down the stitches, what is that like for you internally?
People ask me that a lot, and I don't think I'm meditating. I have tried meditation. I'm a very anxious person. I do not sit still well.
Same.
I'm not good at it. And so I think, especially during COVID and post-COVID, embroidery work and handwork has gotten really synonymous with mindfulness practices.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is great. It can be definitely an avenue, but that's not where I came from or am coming from. And so, like, for example, when I'm working, people ask, like, you know, what music are you listening to? And so I listen to, like, really aggressive, like, house and techno music.
I never would have paired those two together.
I mean, I listen to a wide variety, but, like, yeah. I really like, yeah, like, something with a strong beat, because I find it quite motivating. And so, like, I'm definitely not meditating to that. I mean, it's kind of hard to talk about. And, like, I left home at a very early age.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, kind of grew up in a chaotic, unstable environment. And then I left the States permanently at 22. I think, I mean, I don't want to self-diagnose because I haven't had a diagnosis, whether it's autism or ADHD, but it's definitely somewhere on the spectrum. And yeah, like it's hard to explain why someone would sit down and sew 8 hours, if possible, on a good day.
Yeah.
to do something so repetitive. Who's not meditating? And it's like, I just like it. Like, it scratches an itch.
Yeah, I think that's awesome to do it.
Yeah, I think like listening to you, like, well, on one level as a creative, like me, I could definitely sit down for 8 hours and
yes,
just paint.
I mean,
that'd
be the perfect day. Yeah.
And it really sounds like the music. There's a certain amount of energy in your work. Like you said, a lot of people associate sewing or stitching with relaxing, but for you, it sounds like there's a certain energy behind it whilst you're working, which it's really interesting to hear that side, because I've never really heard someone say that before. So
I wish there's someone else who did crazy intricate work like I did. I could, like, you know, ask them, like, do you feel this way too?
Yeah.
Because yeah, like, I do have a lot of energy. Like I said, I'm a very fidgety, moving, flowing kind of person. Like, I think best when I'm moving. And so I think my work kind of captures what sometimes maybe could be manic energy. It's like a vessel for kind of getting that energy out.
Yeah, really, it's done beautifully. So
yes.
No, I mean, thank you. I hope that doesn't sound too weird, like I'm trying
no.
to like
use... Not at all. Like, everyone, this is like why we love doing it. Part of the reason why we love to interview so many creative women is because everyone has their own unique way of doing their work. And to hear everybody's story, there's going to be somebody out there who'll connect with you. And we'll be like, oh my God, I found someone like me as well. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's so important, I think, to share our stories.
I hope so. Yeah. If that person's out there, hi, hello, drop me a line. Because I do definitely feel like I'm in the community of embroidery on Instagram, both in Japanese and English. And even then, it's like I always feel kind of like the fly on the wall, like, oh, that's cool. Like, I don't really participate that much. Because yeah, sometimes when I do give people these answers, it's not the answer I think they wanted to hear. Like, I'm not running a online workshop for meditation or mindfulness. Like,
yes.
I'm delighted that you think I would be able to offer that, but I'm not that person.
Yeah. I mean, we are super interested in the person you actually are.
Yes. We want to know about you. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. And so, yeah, like, I was also noticing that you have a beautiful piece that you posted on Instagram, which is the Two of Swords, a tarot card. And am I correct in that was a series? I feel like I've seen other tarot cards. Is that right?
Yeah, I've started, I mean, I'm going in order.
Yeah.
And so, like, currently I'm working on the Five of Swords.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a series. I don't have a connection to the tarot, to be perfectly honest. I had never heard of the tarot until maybe my mid-20s. Mm. And it's interesting. I'm using the Rider-Waite deck, like the really standard one.
Yeah.
As kind of a starting point. But someone on Instagram literally just reached out in the comments and they're like, you should really like do a tarot project, like your work with the tarot. And I was like, okay, that's, you know, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed like an accessible, small way for people to interact with my work more easily.
Mm-hmm.
And it also sounded like a fun challenge. I was like, yeah, okay, that sounds great. And so, yeah, it's challenging because it is abstract. But it's like, it took me maybe 6 months to kind of research the tarot. Like, I read a few books. Saw the patterns, or at least tried to identify what I thought were the patterns, and then just kind of started from there. Yeah, like, for example, I use, in Japan at least, it's the Yokata Dharma thread.
Mm-hmm.
because it's cheap and readily available. Like, I don't use DMC thread or anything fancy like that. And so I found four colors that I thought represented the four suits, since, like, you know, the wands is red and the swords is white. I've not done the cups or the pentacles, but, you know, the cups is water, so it's going to be blue, and the pentacles is like the earth. So I thought, you know, yellow was close enough. And so, yeah, now that I've found the patterns, it's going pretty easy. I mean, it takes about a week to do one card, but.
Right. And what's the process like for you of, like, moving from, for example, like, you're looking at the deck that you have and seeing the image there, and then how do you move towards your own interpretation of that? What's that process like for you?
I have an app I've been using. a friend of mine here in Tokyo, she's really big into the tarot, and so she's like, try this app. I will look at the card, I'll read the highlights of what it means, and they'll point out, like, key things that are in the card, like the Two of Swords, for example, the moon over the woman's head is important, and I can't tell you why at the moment, but it's important. And so I made sure to include that. On that card, there's a circle, which you can't really see because I did too much embroidery work on it, but there's a circle. And then there's a bar or a horizontal strip of fabric over the circle. And so that was me trying to symbolize the blindfolded woman.
Yes.
And then there's the crisscrossed swords. There's two swords. Yeah, the moon is between those two swords. I don't have it with me right now. But yeah, just trying to take maybe two or three elements and then doing my own thing with it.
Right, yeah.
Like, currently I'm working on the Five of Swords. And the swords suit hard because they literally are swords. And so it's more figurative than I've ever done them. And so you can count on the cards, like, there's one sword or two swords or three swords. And so it's a little awkward. But the Five of Swords, again, without looking at the card right now, in the foreground, there's a guy holding swords who looks a bit smug and cheeky. Mm-hmm. And then there's two guys in the background kind of looking or walking away in defeat. And the card is about, like, bullying, I think, or, like, winning, but to your own detriment, perhaps. And so this card, for example, the way I'm doing it, the guy who was victorious, he's square, he's a bit spiky and red, because in my mind that means cheeky and angry. Uh-huh. And then the two guys who are, like, walking away in defeat, they're smaller and bluer, and they're circles. Like, oh, that's kind of, you know, sad. It's soft and sad. And so if you look at the card immediately, it would not maybe look like the Five of Swords, but that's where I'm coming from, or, like, how I'm taking those elements.
Right. Yeah. And it all has some meaning for you, some connection for you. And that's, I think, what's most interesting, especially as we move away from the figurative and more towards the abstract. Like, very often that is the case, that there's this underlying meaning that we know is there if we are aware of those connections, right?
Yeah.
Like colors, as you just told us. And that is super interesting.
Yeah, it's been a fun project. I mean, to this day, I've never had a reading or done a reading. I am intrigued by it. It's been a fun project. And the symbolism is interesting to learn. So,
yeah, it's so deeply embedded, actually, in Western culture in ways that I think we don't even necessarily realize if we don't know about it. You know, it is.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And that part is fascinating, too, in my experience with the tarot, is like, oh, okay, that's been there all along, and I didn't know. Those kinds of things are in there, yeah.
Yeah, I'm probably going to redo the major cards up to a point, because I was doing it, again, this 2 years ago now, and so my style has changed and the size has changed. But having completed the major arcana, it's like, oh yeah, like, I mean, being interested in, like, somewhat interested in Jungian philosophy, or, like, you know, the hero's journey, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that does make sense. And the pattern it makes, and so yeah.
And I think that's, like, one good thing about the tarot. Everyone, well, the people I have known that are interested in it, you build your own relationship with it, don't you? So everyone often approaches it in a different way or has a different reason for using it. So I think that's kind of the beauty of tarot, that it's kind of accessible to everyone who is interested in it, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Do you both practice it or are familiar with
I
it?
have just recently become more interested in it as you were saying, like in the sort of deeper symbolic Jungian sense. I'm really interested in it in that regard. I've always I'm interested in divinatory practices as a kind of connection to feminine power, like historically, you know. And so I've been approaching my interest in tarot in that almost like an academically curious way, you know. But divinatory practices are interesting to me in that regard, that they have been a suppressed form of feminine knowing and power. And so when I was young in the like 90s, I had a friend who was very, very into it. And I did try to get into it at that time. And I remember just feeling like it didn't feel good to me at that time. But now I do find it to be much more, interesting in a larger cultural way, especially in terms of the history of Western culture in particular.
I'm still learning about it, and so I can't speak that freely on it maybe, but just learning from my friend who's taught me a bit. Something fun she did for me, I guess technically a reading, and I can't tell you how she did it, but it's where you like add up your birthdays, like
Oh,
the
yes.
numbers in your birthday, and then that card, the number of that card is like the card that represents you the most. Or do you know that?
Yes.
So she did mine, and my card, like holistic card, like life card, whatever, is the Chariot,
Interesting.
which I think makes, like, when she said that, I was like, oh my God, like no way, because like, oh yeah, it makes total sense. Like powering through, don't stop. The card's related to water. It's like, oh holy cow, okay.
That is really, really interesting.
So
And I think that's what happens with tarot. Like, the more you do it, the more the connections that you gradually see.
yeah, definitely.
For me, I'd use it more on like a daily or weekly basis, just as like guidance. Okay, I need to focus more this way, or okay, this energy can help me to do this thing today.
I've heard, yeah, like that's something I'd like to have, something I'd like to do more in the future, using it in that way, probably.
Especially like if I'm starting a new creative project, it really helps me to at the beginning I often feel a bit like overwhelmed or oh, I don't know where to start. Pulling a card or a couple of cards really helps me to either settle or to focus. I find it quite a nice way to ease into my creative practice when I'm not feeling in the groove, maybe.
Definitely. That's very cool.
So, Lindsay, are there any projects that you're currently working on that you're excited about, you'd like to tell us about?
I'm working on the tarot, and I don't have a lot of projects on at the moment. I'm exhibiting at that Denim and Jeans Festival in Hamamatsucho next week.
Oh, cool.
Next
Yes.
week. Yeah. And it's a fashion event, so I don't really know how I fit into that. And I exhibited in Osaka, which was also a fashion event. I have a very wide audience in Japan, but I do not have a market for my work in Japan. And so I think this coming couple years, maybe 1 or 2 years, I have little intention to exhibit in Japan at least, just to focus more on making bigger work or more cohesive work. I'm looking forward to creating bigger work for possible exhibition in the future.
Cool.
Yeah, just I'm excited to not have to make small, unmeaningful work in order to support myself,
Okay.
if that makes any sense.
Yes,
Oops.
completely.
Like I want to make bigger work. I'm really flattered that people say like, oh, I love your work. It'd look really cute as a pouch or a bag. Like that's, yeah, I know it would. I just don't want to make it. I'm sorry. And so on one hand, I'm losing time to make work with the teaching I have to do, but I hope that gives me the space, the financial space to make bigger work I don't have to sell. And so because I've got a few ideas for very large work I want to do, and so I'm excited to work on that.
Oh, that is an exciting idea.
Yeah.
I would love to see pieces like that. That's an exciting thing to think about, because one of the things that I really enjoyed about seeing your work in person is the genuinely like textural, topographical, like landscape-like element of being able to stand there looking at it in 3D, you know, and imagining that on a larger scale is like really exciting.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. And just making like a cohesive body of work, like pieces that go together. Yeah, I'm excited. I've scoured Mercari and have already amassed, collected, hoarded, I guess you say hoarded, a very large collection of green fabrics, which I don't normally work with. And so like I can look over right now and see them sitting in a box, and it's like, oh yeah, that piece. And so
that's exciting.
Looking forward to that. Yeah. It's going to be mostly applique, not embroidery, but maybe 3 by 3 meters.
Oh, wow.
Or two and a half by 3 meters maybe. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
Exciting. Wow.
That is exciting.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to this denim exhibition to be complete, so I can get to work on that.
Ooh, fun.
Yay. I can't wait to see that. Yeah.
I've not shared it on Instagram yet, mostly because I don't have the space to photograph it, but I've finished an applique piece. That's like maybe a meter by a meter and a half. And it was the first piece I've ever done. But it looks just like my embroidery, but with applique. And so having successfully completed that, it's like, okay, yes, I can do this. Like,
okay.
It translates just fine. It looks interesting.
So Lindsay, we always ask this question too, and it is about your creative flow and like when you're in a place of it not quite coming smoothly, like if you have a thing you want to do and it's just not quite happening the way you ordinarily would like it to, or you're used to it working, how do you handle that kind of situation?
I've got a few ways, and the first one is just be consistent. And so I work every day, outside of teaching. I do embroidery work every day, and I work if I'm tired, if I don't want to work. Like I got COVID for the first time last year, and I was forced to take a week off of school, and I of course felt pretty unwell, but it's like, oh my God, this is a whole week of paid time.
Yay.
I'm going to work. And so I did, that pink applique jacket I did. I did that while I had COVID.
Wow.
And it's not great. It's not my best work, but it's like, I know I showed up and just did the work. And so unfortunately my best advice, or what I do personally, is just power through, because I am stubborn and impatient deep down. And so it's like, just do the work. But, like I said, being a very physical person, if I feel like something's not working, I will just go exercise for 30 minutes to an hour. just so you burn off the energy. I really got into, this is cheesy, but I got into YouTube HIIT videos, like high intensity workout videos during COVID. I think I'm just a weirdo, but if I can work out for like 15 minutes to the point where I can't breathe, that usually like clears the energy out. And it's like, okay, like.
It's like a power thing.
Yeah, it's just like a power cleanse. Like, it's like, okay, you did that. You cleared the energy out. At the very least, even if you don't go back to work, Lindsay, talking to myself, you at least did something positive and healthy for yourself.
Yes.
That's my second one. The third one is I just throw my hands up in the air and say, screw it. And my partner and I will go to a convenience store and buy like a bad for you snack.
Yeah.
My favorite thing is to look at the seasonal crisps and chips.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, yes.
And so spy on those, get something like that, get a drink, take a walk around the neighborhood. It's my favorite thing to do.
Yeah. It's another way of clearing the energy. Just a totally different avenue.
Go get a corn dog from Lawson's and take a walk.
If it works, it works.
So, Lindsay, if we'd like to find you online, where can we do that?
Yeah. I'm on Instagram, and that's where I'm most often at. I also have a website that's very poorly updated. Both are just Lindsay Ann, spelled, you know, N-D-Z-E, not my real spelling, but I also have a Substack that I've recently started. It's not quite, I've only got two posts on it so far, but it's called Hebe Sanpo, which basically means daily walk. And so it's a new collection of smaller postcard size work, like something you might mail to a friend. And it's basically me taking snapshots of weird things I see around the city and doing a small abstract work based on that. And yeah, just kind of like a postcard. And so it's work I'm not sharing on Instagram, actually, because I mean, some of it's kind of personal and I don't want to just kind of blast mm-hmm. personal essays out on Instagram. And so if you're looking to maybe see more behind the scenes or see like what I was thinking or doing when I was making something, that's a place you could check out if you're curious. Substack is paid, but there's also a free element. And so if you subscribe, it's kind of like a newsletter. And so every month my goal is to have, you know, one new original piece of work, not on Instagram, and kind of like a little life update. So.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
And we'll put links in the show notes so people can go there and click on through to find out more. Check out Lindsay's beautiful work.
Thank you.
It's amazing. It's amazing. If you haven't seen it yet, please do. It is just beautiful, and you're going to be inspired by looking at all of
Thank you so much.
Yeah, gorgeous textures and shapes. So thank you again so much for being with us, Lindsay. It's just been such a pleasure.
Thank you so much for reaching out. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so let's dive into our Ask Us Anything segment where we take questions from you, our listeners, and we love to hear your questions. This one comes from Victoria, who is in Tokyo and actually is our neighbor at our new studio. So she asks the question, how has your work life changed now that you have your own studio?
Yes, thank you, Victoria, neighbor, our creative neighbor.
Yes.
How has it changed for you, Paige? Have you felt it in it? Tell us.
Well, I think creating the space itself has been a creative project, which I have really enjoyed. I'm not one for interiors so much, and you are, right? So it's been really fun for me to do the interior element and to think about furniture, to think about what would go where and how the flow of the room is and where the light is and all of those things has been really, that's been super fun for me. And then I have just really enjoyed the neighborhood that it's in, which is Shimokitazawa. That neighborhood of Tokyo is fantastic and amazing. And every time I go there, I feel creatively inspired by the neighborhood itself, you know? So that's element number two. And then the third thing I would say is that I do think having a space specifically dedicated to creativity is different. And when I go in there, I do feel a sense that, okay, it's time to make something. I'm not distracted by laundry or dishes or other people's needs. This is the space for making. And I feel that very much when I go there. Does it feel that way for you?
Yes, definitely. I think not having the visual reminder of all the other things you need to be doing and being in a space that's so kind of minimalist and free of family stuff really helps to just get started, just to have that clear mind, knowing what you want to focus on, you know how much time you have. It's just the process feels so much calmer and relaxing and easier to start working on a new project or whatever it is that I'm doing.
Yeah. Do you feel like the work you do there is qualitatively different than the work you do elsewhere?
I don't know that it is. I think just within myself, I feel less
external pressure. I feel like time in the studio is kind of slower.
Yes.
It's slower. There's no pressure. It feels more joyful. And, you know, the light in that room is so wonderful as well. That I just, it's much more enjoyable. Whereas if I'm doing it at home, I don't know, I always feel like there's some pressure to get it done quickly. I don't know why. Maybe because I feel like I need to do the dishes, I need to do this, I need to do. Which still need to be done when I'm at the studio. It's just there's no visual reminder of it. Yeah. I mean? Just being away from it takes the pressure off this, you know, the to-do list, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. You're not catching a pile of laundry out of the corner of your eye while you're and thinking, oh man, I got to do that. You know?
Yeah. Because some people, I'm like, I know some people who that doesn't bother them at all.
Uh-huh.
Like, but like visually, if I see it, I'm like, okay, I just have to get it done. Or it's going to bother me.
Right.
And I think that's where, you know, a few hours, you know, an hour and a half can get lost in the morning when I want to be doing my artwork.
Yeah.
So
yeah, yes, true.
Yeah.
One of the things I think about the studio too is I love this concept of containers for creativity, right? Like that we have containers, and we can have a time container, we can have a medium as a container, or we can have a space as a container. And I think that the studio is a container for us creatively, in a way that I've never really had before. I've never had a studio space before. Have you?
No, not since I was at university. No.
Yeah. And I think that element too really allows me to kind of relax into the fact that I have put time and energy and money and attention and care towards this specific space for this. And it kind of raises up my feeling of like what I'm doing there, because so much has been put into it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like we're making a stronger commitment to ourselves and the things we want to accomplish by, you know, having that studio. We're sending out a signal to ourselves and to other people that this is what we're doing and this is what we're creating. And it brings a different level of commitment to the work that I do, I feel.
Yeah, yeah, I feel that way too. Thank you for this question, Victoria. It's such a great one. And thank you also for your contributions to this studio. Victoria has contributed majorly to us being there, and a couple of our bookshelves are from her as well.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you, Victoria, for helping us because, yeah, she was really helpful in encouraging us to just ask, just find out if anything's free. And we did, and now we have a studio space. So
yes.
Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you. And thank you to everyone who sends questions. We absolutely love hearing from you, and we get excited about every question, don't we, Jordana?
We do, yes.
So you can reach out to us on Instagram at thecreativitycafe21 and drop us a message there. Leave a comment or send us a DM. Or you can email us at creativitycafe21@gmail.com. We love your messages and we are so happy to get them.
Thanks for joining us today on the Creativity Cafe.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review and share it with your friends.
And follow us on Instagram at thecreativitycafe21 for special updates and sneak peeks behind the scenes.
Catch you again next time. Keep creating.